Holly. Okay. Right. We're really
happy.
Exactly. Okay.
Hello. Good afternoon. I do have one change to make my evidence today, and that is on page 7 at paragraph 5.6, and that simply reflects the number of changes that Dr. Bramley presented to you earlier. So that's paragraph 5.6. Eagerly listening today and noting down things that have popped up, so hopefully I'll be able to address you on some of the things you've been thinking about. If there are other things, obviously, feel free to ask those. So I'll just quickly summarise my evidence, and then I thought I might take you through the major changes we're proposing to make to the district plan rules, probably point by point, just so that and we can perhaps have questions as we go on. So in summary, in my opinion, the primary planning questions to be considered in relation to this plan change, is the objective introduced by Plan Change 51 consistent with meeting the purpose of the RMA, having considered the relevant matters inherent in Section 22? And what are the benefits and costs of the environmental, economic, social and cultural effects that accrue from the plan change? And are the provisions proposed the most appropriate methods of achieving those objectives? So in addressing those issues, I've relied on and read all the evidence listed there in 3.2, and I've also read Liz Stephen's evidence as delivered this morning. So at paragraph 3.3, I conclude from a planning point of view, I consider the plan change to be a carefully thought out package, which provides for additional dwellings which form a logical extension of the existing Peninsula Bay subdivision, whilst protecting the important landscape and ecological values of the site overall, and providing for increased recreational opportunity and resources. In my opinion, the objective of this rezoning is consistent with meeting the purpose of the Act, having considered the relevant matters inherent in Section 22. And in terms of these benefits and costs, the primary benefits are, in my opinion, provision of 24 additional dwellings for Wanaka, the provision of additional recreation resource, including new walking tracks, a new section of mountain bike track, upgrades to and maintenance of existing biking tracks, separation of biking and walking tracks, two new car parks and a new public toilet, provision of financial contributions on a per lot basis to offset any loss in the area provided for walking and mountain biking in the future, provision of extensive enhancement planting within both private land and public open space land, along with protection of some existing short tussock grassland. Protection of ONL values of the site by a careful building platform locations and building controls along with amenity planting, particularly when viewed from important lake viewpoints. I consider the primary costs to be loss of open space area, some of which is currently being used informally for walking and mountain biking, loss of some short tussock grassland and Kanuka, and change in outlook for some residents of Peninsula Bay and Penrith Park from open space to dwellings and additional planting. And overall, I consider the plan change will achieve part two of the Act. So in terms of my role in the process, I was involved in the team which was engaged quite early on with respect to this development to develop up a package, I suppose, of development package that would allow some additional built form at Peninsula Bay and provide that in a planning framework in terms of a district plan zoning. And you've heard from the other witnesses that we had Mr. Espy and Botting and Mr. Bramley, or Dr. Bramley, all sort of inputting into that. So it's quite an iterative process. We'd have the layout, we'd all have a look at it, it would be modelled, we'd put the effects, we'd work out how we deal with it from a planning provision's point of view. And that sort of morphed into what was then lodged as plan change for the firm. So the proposal, the purpose of the proposal is to enable the development of part of the land currently zoned open space at Peninsula Bay North for specified low density residential development, whilst providing for ecological gains and improved passive recreation on the balance of the open space zoned land between the Peninsula Bay development and Lake Wanaka. And as Semple said this morning, it's simply really a moving of a line on that. And as part of that iterative process with the expert team, it was clear that while it was moving a line on a map, there was going to need to be another layer of control in terms of whatever development was allowed for within that low density residential. And when it was lodged and notified, we put together a set of covenants, which would have been land covenants, which would secure controls on the development of land within the future lots. The purpose of that approach was really to stop adding additional rules into the district plan, keep it really simple. But as you will have seen in council's submission, they were concerned about sort of the, I guess, management of that going forward. How do you manage covenants if it gets legally a little bit tricky? So in the end, we agreed with the council policy planners that a set of rules and associated objective and policy was preferable. So that was then lodged as an amendment in July of this year. So I won't go through all the different controls at the moment. I'll take you through the rules specifically when we talk about that. And in terms of the planning question, if you like, I think it's important to just reiterate that this is a consideration of a plan change, it's not a resource consent, it's very much a plan change, and we need to consider that in terms of what Section 32 requires in terms of an evaluation. So that is to, and I'm at 7.8 of my evidence, to examine the extent to which the proposed objective of the plan change, and that's proposed new objective 22, is the most appropriate way to achieve the purpose of the Act, and to examine whether the proposed provisions of the plan change are the most appropriate way to achieve the objective of the plan change and the existing relevant objectives of the district plan. And that's by identifying other reasonable practical options and assessing the efficiency and effectiveness of the provisions and achieving the relevant objectives and the relevant objectives of the existing district plan. We also had to summarise the reasons for the provisions and to identify and, if possible, quantify the benefits and costs of the environmental, economic, social and cultural effects that are anticipated from the implementation of the provisions in the context of efficiency and effectiveness. And finally, to assess the risk of acting or not acting if uncertain or insufficient information about the subject matter exists. And just briefly, I do note that some of the submitters, and I think the 42A officer, has set out the view that the plan change is inconsistent with the objectives and policies of the operative and proposed district plan. And my understanding of the legislation is that Section 32 does not necessitate an assessment of the policies of the operative district plan, simply the objectives, and nor does it require an assessment of the proposal against the proposed plan. So that's the basis that I prepared. Turnout evaluation was prepared. The other thing to note, when we amended the application and the plan change has occurred a couple of times, each time we've provided a Section 32 AA evaluation. So that's simply the follow on, say, to provide that basis to assist decision making. terms of my evidence, I won't take you through all the effects. You've heard a lot about effects from the experts already, and you will do if you have any questions for me on that. Very happy to answer those. But I, perhaps if I take you to the relevant chapters, and I do have some copies here. I don't know, I understand you don't have full sets, like just a plan.
No.
So I do have... I'll try not to load you up with huge amounts of paper. So I have given you three chapters of the plan. The first, in terms of numerical order, is the residential section. And really the only purpose there is to just put this plan change in context about how would we then give effect to this, what would happen if the plan change was granted and it became operative, and Pin Bay said, hey, we want to now go ahead and develop this land. So the first thing is that on page 7-33, Roman numeral 14 refers to an outline development master plan at Peninsula Bay. That's an existing rule in the plan. It was set up when the plan first, the land was first zoned low density residential. And that essentially requires that no subdivision or development shall take place in the zone at Pen Bay that's inconsistent, unless it's consistent with an outline development master plan. So that's important for two reasons. One is that there's an existing ODMP that's already been approved, and I've got a copy of that decision here if that's helpful, and the current ODMP which has been approved. That's helpful, we may perhaps we'll come back to that. But essentially, you know, there's one here, it's been approved, that's what's being built to at the moment. It includes the open space land.
Yes.
So for the new open or the new LDR zone to be developed, this will need to be varied. There'd need to be a variation of that consent. So there's no, just to be clear, there's no suggestion of another rule that relates to that. It's just simply that it will be there in the meeting. So in terms of the rest of that chapter, the only important thing to note is that once the ODMP is approved, a subdivision consent is granted, and people decide they want to build houses on these lots, these rules would apply. The low-density residential rules would apply. The standard rules would apply, as well as anything that's provided for via the subdivision consent in terms of the specific provisions, which will require compliance, of course, with the structure plan. So that's the residential chapter. Turning to the subdivision development and financial contributions chapter. So the version you have, fingers crossed, is the one that shows all the suggested changes to that chapter. So if you go to 15.13, have some red.
Oh yes.
Sheets.
Yep.
Excellent. So objective 22 is the objective that is being promoted to provide specifically for Peninsula Bay. So that's a low density residential development at Peninsula Bay North, enhances and where appropriate protects areas of significant indigenous biodiversity, protects the visual amenity values associated with the outstanding natural landscape, and enables people to access the land for passive and active recreation. And to support that objective is the policy which refers to that development within Pen Bay North low density residential zone shall be generally in accordance with the structure plan, that's this plan, and in particular the identification of ecological enhancement areas, connections to the open space zone, building platform locations, and building heights. So those are the things that I've identified reading all of the evidence that it's really important that are provided for in policy. And then, so in QLDC, subdivision is generally a controlled activity, and this would be the case here, assuming you can comply with all the site standards and all the zone standards. So if you go to Rule 15.2.3.4 on page 15.17, so non-complying activity, and as we, I think you pointed out this morning, clause 5.1 is the existing Peninsula Bay rule that's there, and then the suggestion is to add Roman numeral 2, which refers to any subdivision within the north zone land that's not in accordance with an approved outline development master plan or the Peninsula Bay North structure plan is a non-compliant activity. And Commissioner Meader has some thoughts about your concerns about the ODMP, and I'm sort of on the fence, to be honest. You could probably remove the reference to the ODMP in Roman numeral 2, and I don't think it would make a lot of difference, because that rule already applies earlier. So either way, Penn Bay are going to need to vary their existing consent to provide for it.
Right.
So if you wanted to stay away from adding any more references to ODMPs in the plan, then I think it would probably be fine to do so. Just leave the reference to the structure plan in the supervision.
So the non-compliant part is only if you step beyond the structure plan?
Yes, correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Carry on through. Page 1523 relates to financial contributions. That's in the blue text. The blue, I should have explained earlier, the blue double underline is the latest amendments, which is presented in my evidence, which is since the Section 42 reporting. So at the recommendation of Mr. Greenaway, there has been an inclusion of reference to financial contributions as a compensation in the plan, so I've provided for it in 15.2.5.1 Roman numeral B, and then the specific rules on the following page, which is Roman numeral 3, and that refers to Peninsula Bay North, and it talks about a financial contribution for the purpose of developing or maintaining tracks and trails within the Wanaka area may be included as a condition of any resource consent for subdivision within the Peninsula Bay North Zone. The contribution shall be $5,000 per lot being consented and shall be in monetary form only. So that's the financial contribution. There was a question about whether there's a specific project or not. I think this is probably as specific as we can get it. It does refer to for the purpose of developing or maintaining tracks and trails within the Wanaka area. So I think that's probably as focused as we can get it in this situation. So it would provide some direction about where that money needed to be spent. And then in terms of the next sort of several pages, I won't take you through them all, but there are a lot of provisions in the plan around lot sizes and other normal things you find in subdivision chapters. And the next specific rules that have been suggested to be added is on page 1535. And Roman numeral 11. You'll see a mix of red and blue there, so the red underline is that was proposed as part of the amended plan change, and then the blue is added in terms of more evidence following the Section 42A reports. The intention here really is to have a kind of a double layer belts and braces approach. The first part, so clause A, refers to the structure plan, and in some way that's all you really need. You need to comply with that, and we do, as far as structure plans go, there's quite a bit of detail on there in terms of building platform areas, building heights, and building levels to those more sensitive sites. There's also the species lists and some other things about clearance and sourcing and maintenance. It's got a lot of information on the structure plan itself, but the idea of the following clauses are really just to secure those things that are important to be very clear about, and I think it does add some certainty, particularly when you think about lot 9 might be owned by someone, lot 10's owned by somebody else, so it's nice to have it sort of as well as a plan, but also on the rules themselves. About whether to take you through all of those or whether. Okay. I guess the highlights are that you know, there are some specific heights of buildings. An LDR zone permitted height is 8 to 9 metres. Building heights in here are between 5 and 5.5 metres, you know, significantly smaller. The other important points are that, you know, the revegetation on the open space, or sorry, the revegetation areas shown shall be planted before issue of any title. So I think there was a discussion earlier about, well, how do we know this is actually going to happen this time? And one of the key purposes, or one of my intentions of the provisions, is to make sure that this does happen, and one of the best ways to do that, in my view, is to require it to happen. Titles are issued, because titles is that real trigger between passing over to the future landowners and the consent of the developer, consent holder to do the work. So the idea is that all the planting would be done by, certainly in the open space zone, will be done by the applicant, the subdivision applicant, and there is a requirement that they would have a requirement to maintain for 5 years. In terms of the planting within the individual lots, that would have to occur before buildings are established along on those lots, and that owner would have obligations in perpetuity. So in terms of the method to secure all of these, they would simply become conditions of the subdivision consent. And anything that required ongoing obligations, such as planting, maintenance, those sorts of things, that would be a consent notice applied to the title, which is a very standard type of mechanism to secure ongoing obligations on individual future lot owners. In terms of the tracks, so down to Roman numeral 8, you know, there is a requirement those tracks are constructed prior to the walking track. Prior to the titles being issued. So that would have to occur before any titles were issued. In terms of, so that's all the changes that is proposed as part of the plan change to the district plan. There are, in terms of how a subdivision consent would be considered, if you comply with all those things, you have controlled activity. But this plan's a little bit tricky in that there is a whole host of assessment matters for resource consents, as the Henderson might call, that you then have to apply. So it's not a simple matter of two or three matters that are matters of control. There actually are several sections, and that's in those pages from 1536 onwards, right through to the end of that chapter, really, including things like landscape, servicing, and they're all dealt with separately in this plan, which is, in my experience, a little bit unusual. But it's very thorough. So it does give a lot of scope at that subdivision stage to make sure that all the things that are important and are being talked about in this forum actually get then are required to be to occur, and that anything ongoing can be secured by a concession.
I mean, just to sort of interrupt me, break the flow or anything, but in terms of, for example, the revegetation, you know, requirement, and that's helpful to, I think, definitely attach it to the lot, you know, the title being issued, that's great.
Yes.
This is just all hypothetical, just goes through your mind, but what if there's a debate about the spacings of the proposed revegetation? You know, we're going to put in one to every 2 square metres, and no, you should be every one...
Yeah.
Metres square or something.
Yeah.
Can those sort of debates be worked through the controlled activity classification?
Yes, I think so. And you mentioned the idea of a management plan prior, and my experience with management plans is they're really useful tool and they're used consenting nationally. Not normally used in a district plan provisions, though, and I would suggest that would be appropriate time at subdivision stage to then apply, you know, to require a management plan. And it would be, you know, absolutely would be for something like this. You wouldn't just go ahead and carry on planting. All the parties would need to have surety that it's going to happen in a sustainable way, that the best outcomes are being achieved, and it wouldn't be definitely be a management plan. So that would be, I envisage, a condition of a subdivision consent.
Right.
You could, I don't see any reason why you would, you could put a performance standard that requires, suggests the condition of consent for a management plan.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I think, you know, we have to be careful here. This is a plan change. We've got a long way to go before there are houses on these lots from a steps point of view.
Yes, no, I can understand that. I guess it's just the question of always controlled activities is, yes, the controlled activities provide enough scope where there is a debate around some sort of aspect of implementing the plan.
Yes.
For that to be resolved, you know, where there's two different opinions,
yep,
council versus the applicant, you know, for example, over the spacings of trees in the revegetation area of the Kānuka. If you get into an area of debate, does the control activity give enough scope for that, you know, to be sorted out?
Well, I mean, the council would have to grant it.
Yes, that's right.
But
yeah,
with their conditions.
Yeah.
So it would then be up to the consent holder to appeal those conditions if they felt they weren't just.
Yeah, that's right.
So I think it does give quite a good, given the context of this particular plan.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It's council's conditions.
Yeah. I mean, the normal rule of thumb of the condition of control activities is you can't impose a condition which has the effect of, you know, obviating what's proposed.
Yes.
Certainly.
But I think in this case it's going to be a matter of detail.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yes.
You know, it should be 1 metre spacings or should they be 0.5?
Yeah, it's not sort of fundamental to the.
No.
Okay, yeah. That's right.
So that's all I have on the plan provisions themselves. I've got a couple of other things to cover, and perhaps come back. In terms of the open space zone, I think Commissioner Henderson had some questions about that zone, and it's, about the purpose of that zone. Certainly it's my understanding there are only two places in the Wanaka area that have open space zone. They're both in private ownership. Or were when they were developed. This one at Penn Bay, which is obviously part ONL and part not, and the other one is at Riverside, which is at Albert Town. That's outside an ONL, and it's a sort of an area to be used, just left open. So the provisions themselves in the open space zone basically prohibit residential activity. They permit weed clearance, but they don't permit any other clearance of vegetation. And the important point to note about the open space zone provisions is that there's a presumption of a discretionary activity unless you provide otherwise in the open space zone, and that's different to the rest of Queenstown Lakes District land, where there's actually a presumption of permitted activity, which is quite different to other plans around the country. So it's a pretty tightly controlled zone. In terms of its relevance to this plan change request, it's relevant to the remaining open space zone that would be left. There's obviously no requirement for the proposed LDR zone to be consistent with that, because that's why it's been changed. So that's important, and I think that was a little bit confused in some of the Section 42A writing.
Yeah, that's right.
And the other part about that is both of those open space zones are within the inner growth boundary in terms of the Wanaka Structure Plan Review, which was 2007.
And it's helpful, thank you, to go through those rules. I was noted in the 42A report, there was some commentary about the provisions, the detailed provisions,
yeah,
and partly just sort of helpful information about should we be thinking about minded to approve it. But it sort of raised a number of sort of points about scope. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that. This is at the back of the 42A report.
My recollection of that was... scope about the provisions that were being added.
Right. Yeah.
Well, a little bit surprised it was raised. The submission from council was very clear to say, we don't like the covenants, we think it needs to be dealt with in terms of planning. So all we've done is basically picked up the requirements that the covenants would have proposed and put them into the planning rules.
Right.
So Ms. Seville can no doubt deal with that as a legal review.
And to get a flavour of those covenants as originally proposed, we go back to the application material.
Yes, correct.
Yep.
So that's, I should say that they've been enhanced following submissions and and the 42A version as well.
Right.
Yeah. So there is more detail on that now.
So I'm just trying to find appendix. Appendix G, was it?
Yes.
G. Something about Peninsula Bay sale and purchase agreements, and then there's another one about there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, tell them. Oh, okay, great. So you're saying that, okay, there's going to be some differences in the wording, obviously, but generally, we talked about the general rules. Some of the matters of what was proposed was including his covenant.
Yes. So the issue was the mechanism rather than
right, any sort of scope issue or anything like that.
Correct.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. Okay.
One question that I can't remember where in the documents I read it, but it relates to the condition that restricts residential activity to a maximum of one unit per lot. Somewhere it was raised whether that covers the issue of a family flat or a granny flat within the principal unit, where that would ordinarily be treated as a nursery residential unit.
Yes.
Does that wording, so restricting it to one unit per allotment, so the issue was for the services based on it's originally on the 36 units, where if you have 24 dwellings plus 24 granny flats in effect, does that have an effect on the servicing? Does that all cover that?
It relates to the definition of residential unit.
Yeah, and I can't recall
whether
that includes a granny flat or not.
So that would be, as the rules stand at the moment, it allows yep, and 24 dwellings and 24 residential flats.
Yeah, quite essentially.
So we have a selling to that one.
Yeah.
Oh, so
that's whether that's the intention, yeah, whether that's just a consequence of the draft and that perhaps wasn't intended.
It's not the intention, no.
No, that's all right.
No, I think good spotting would be my
So there might be an adjustment there to the wording or some clarification?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly, quite simply adjust that provision. Yeah, you might want to say excluding, well, I've actually gone back and looked at the definition and just tweak the wording to make sure it corresponds.
Right.
But perhaps if we come back to you and our reply.
That's fine. Something you could look at.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the that's helpful, the detail there. Standing back from the detail of the plan change, I guess what I'm sort of struggling with a bit still is this sort of this lost opportunity side of the equation, I guess, with this land that's been open space zone and now going to be changing the housing. And the sort of how we might sort of value or take into account the sort of that lost opportunity that, you know, it could be with the appropriate council investment at some point, if it does become public land, which is sort of the intention, it could be revegetated as you know, trees and you know, grasslands or whatever it might be. So we'd have more of them than what's just been proposed now. There could be more walking tracks, there could be more picnicking, open space, all that sort of stuff, the good stuff that's been talked about. And just how we sort of, it seems to me that this is sort of the question that we've got in front of us, is sort of how can I understand what's been proposed in terms of the benefits of the proposal, but it's sort of that lost opportunity side. Because you kind of mentioned in your sort of, you know, cost and benefits, it's quite useful, but I guess what we've kind of had to do in planning terms is sort of kind of look at, you know, the cost and the benefits and look them together and across, and is there sort of a net benefit there?
Yeah, and I heard you sort of musing on that earlier, and I had also think about it in that context. I guess for me, it's there's two parts to the answer to that. One is that lost opportunity, but would it happen?
Yes.
You know, there's no evidence from the council that any of this is proposed to do any sort of additional pest control, any sort of planting, any sort of mountain bike or walking tracks. There's nothing, certainly at this point for you, that I've heard,
yes,
that says that there is any sort of intention, let alone budget, to do anything with this land. It would be ambitious, I guess, or hopeful, to say, oh look, let's just leave it, we'll vest it in council and let's just see what they do with it. When I listened to Dr. Bramley, the ecological values of that site are likely to degrade rather than improve. So I guess that's the first point about lost opportunity. The other way I thought about it is, as I was looking, what are you getting at then? And I wondered if it's really about amenity loss overall. And for me, it's really the amenity is a combination of the things that the submitters have told us about and have heard evidence about. So it is the ecological values, it is the landscape values, and it is the recreational values, probably all kind of brought together to say, well, what's important about this site? So I'm not sure that there's something else as well. I sort of feel that, from my point of view, it's a amenity is formed or as a combination of those things, and those are the things that the submitters have talked about as being important to them as well.
I mean, on the sort of, you could say, I guess, from the council's point of view, there's no plans for the area at the moment because the council doesn't control the land at the moment. It's still waiting for it to be vested.
Mm.
So to a certain extent, I guess, they could reasonably say, well, hang on, you know, don't know when it's going to be vested. So, you know, how can we plan for that? Is one sort of, the other side of the coin, just to sort of press the issue a bit, often it comes up in discussion about, you know, management of land, the extent to which, you know, a sort of a pattern of degradation, while it's been in private ownership, should be taken into account as a sort of a, you know, a baseline when it's actually something that's been allowed to occur in simple terms with the land.
Yeah,
I
take
the
point. Often you might get a private ownership who doesn't do anything, the land is ready to go. But you know, this isn't, as far as I'm aware, being proposed to set up as a national park or a high value reserve or anything where there would be investment made to protect these values. Whether that happens in the future, I guess, you know, you can be guided by the others in terms of expert evidence.
I mean, I guess the argument comes that the opportunity cost while it's there is not necessarily a big one at the end of the day. I guess it's the simple sort of terms in a way, in terms of the size of the area or its potential recreational use or its potential ecological benefits. But no doubt the submitters will tell us a different story at the moment, and we'll get to hear from them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm not saying that's my conclusion or anything.
Well, I think, though, it's important to note that, you know, the actual development area is really small. We're talking about 24 lots. And in fact, that was the reason why we didn't want to put a whole lot of rules in the plan, because it was like, gosh, it's only 24 lots. It's in terms of subdivision numbers, it's tiny. It's very, very small. So in terms of any loss, actual physical loss, it's extremely small. And, you know, you've heard from the other experts about the actual values and the actual loss of recreational area. But I think in
the
overall context, it's very, very
small. Do you have any views on the precedent factor that we've seen from some of the submitters?
Oh, I don't think there's precedent here. I think this is very, very different from any other potential future examples. This is the, as we've said, there's only Riverside and the site that's zoned open space. There's no others in Wanaka. So if you were saying, for example, I think Stucky Forest was an example that was raised, completely different situation. Different ownership structure, different vegetation. They have to be considered on the merits. So I don't think it's a present issue here. It's quite different. It's simply an extension of an existing residential suburb. So it's quite different to saying a whole new development.
Final question for me. I always say final question and then think of three or four other ones.
This is your right.
You don't see any issues, I mean, it's there in the evidence, but I mean, the regional policy statement, nothing in terms of, you know, we have to give effective regional policy statements these days.
Yes, you do. There's a upper of RPS and a proposed.
Yeah.
The proposed doesn't have decision. Decisions haven't been released yet.
Right.
In terms of the operative, it's pretty broad in general, to be honest. But you know, it's dealing with the key part two matters. You know, the O&L issues, use of resources,
right.
Urban consolidation, those things. So I think it actually sits pretty well with the RPS.
Right. Do you think they would? If we found, and this is hypothetical, if we found the O&L line should be where, you know, Dr. Reed has talked about being towards more the south, do you think there's a more sort of fundamental sort of conflict start to come through there?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that the level of development proposed within the non-O&L site would be your listening to. You know, if you would find that the O&L line was at the existing held-out boundary, I think that the level of development, the intensity that's proposed is probably greater than it would be suitable with an RFO of O&L in terms of development.
Yes.
How would you rate councils involved with this O&L line issue?
You might not think so. Feel free not to answer that one.
just seems to me it's been something that's been left quite undecided.
Oh, I don't think it's undecided, actually. I think it was very clear in the environment report. It was clear on the decision. I don't think that line is grey.
But it doesn't sort of appear in the
unfortunately, the council didn't keep themselves organised enough to put a line on the map, which is disappointing. Frankly, from a practitioner's point of view, that is disappointing.
So that was a discussion about there is a schedule on the plan which does say this is the line determined by various court decisions.
Yes, and I think I wouldn't have read that energy on those, I'm not sure.
Why it didn't
so,
make it.
But the line in terms of what the court's line was very, very clear.
Just one more question for me. Just going back to some questions sort of a few steps back when Commissioner Mann was talking about the opportunity or lost opportunity cost. Mm. If you look at that through a slightly different lens in terms of the language in Section 32, where it talks about the risk of active or not active. Mm. So in this case, if, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if you're saying the risk of not active, which is the risk of not approving plan change, the risk is that the land that's in open space that it will gradually deteriorate because of the use from mountain bikers and from the recreation activities. And so by approving the plan change, if we were so minded, you're overcoming that by putting in some replanting, some management practices that would gradually give the overall net increase or the net improvement in the landscape. So it's not necessarily an opportunity cost, it's more of a if you're not doing it, then there's a gradual decline. Because the future management of that land is unknown at this stage because of the absence of the management plan that the council is developing.
Yes, I have to say I've always thought of that provision to relate to situations where there's a lack of scientific understanding of issues, the risk of acting or not acting. You know, marine farms is something I deal with a lot, and that issue often comes up, rather than not knowing what someone else may do, a third party. So I'm not sure it's the same situation there, but if you did apply it that way, then I think the critical thing here is that the plan change needs to provide its own mitigation. It can't rely on a future council doing certain things.
Yeah, policy that may or may not come to fruition at some point.
That's right, yes, and in fact there's no proposal that they would. So from my assessment, the important thing was to make sure that the plan is self-sufficient, I guess, in the sense of providing the appropriate mitigation to those effects.
Look, I mean, you'll be round anyway, so I mean, if there's anything that sort of comes up through the mind during the overnight, I'm sure we can pick it up tomorrow anyway.
Very heavy time.
Yeah, that's right, sure. Yeah. So I think probably rather than sort of push it along too hard, because it's been a good day, a long day, maybe we sort of stand adjourned now, we've got tomorrow 1 o'clock, is that right, for the submissions, I think?
Yes, 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. Oh, okay. Great.
And I think, I'm sorry, I think we have asked this question already, but given that you're not going to go out on the lake, I take it there is no opportunity to move those, because in fact we could be finished by the end of the day tomorrow, I suspect, if we were able to push those submissions up and bring the council witnesses into the afternoon.
I appreciate what you're saying.
The dollars sticking over in the room.
time and cost and resources. I think, Ms. Charlie, you booked them in for that.
Yeah.
That time.
And I have at least one submitter who cannot make it any earlier.
Right.
That won't be the person at 2 o'clock, I presume, unfortunately. Well, it'll be the person at 5.
Yeah. Is there any chance of trying to get hold of them and seeing if they're wanting to come in earlier? I think it's just an option for them. Obviously, we want to stick on that pile. I think probably we're going to have to live with that because we don't want to be, seem to be too fucking around with folk. But if there's any option there about them coming in early, then I guess that's a potential outcome. Mm. They would need to be told, wouldn't we, fairly soon. That's going to come.
Ms. Charles would need to also contact the council to come from Dunedin.
Sorry?
Johnny would also need to see if Dr. Reid can come for council. council can come earlier if it's, if the intention becomes that we try and get it all done tomorrow.
Oh, I see, because she booked it for Wednesday.
Yeah. That's just a flow on, that's all.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
so that might not happen.
Is it just you, Vicky, and Dr. Reid who will be presenting for the council?
No, also Jenny Calavasi.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. I think we want to get another site visit in while we're here,
right.
Obviously, because we had a good look. Oh, well, it was a bit of a quick look around this morning,
right.
Couple. And I think we probably want to get out there and have another look. Yes. Imagine so at some point. So, yeah, it may be more convenient for us in a way to. Now we know the detail. It's a bit evidence that that is going to be like when we're planning the things. Mm. We've got a better idea in our minds where all those things are at.
Mm.
I think probably hold the horses, Julia. Sorry. But I think probably what would probably easier, probably more beneficial for us to go out there and have another look on site tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning.
Yeah, if that's okay.
That's fine.
You've all got your laptops and electronics these days, so I'm sure there's other work you can get on with. And I think I think it's probably better off just to stick with the time. And then we've got the council staff Wednesday morning. Yeah. Don't think they'll take the whole day yet. So,
no.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, certainly, using
Bunnings
as a ride across from
the
Pie.
Yes.
That completes the requesters.
Right.
Case.
Okay. Okay, well that sounds like a plan. So we'll reconvene by 2:00, sorry. Yeah. Yep. Stick with the submitters, we'll keep them heavy. And we'll do a bit more of a site visit. Now, is there anything on site that we want to sort of... I must admit it was very helpful having the surveyor gentleman out there this morning.
Like to young surveyor back there again tomorrow.
And, we don't have the submitters or anything in front of us. I'm sure they wouldn't be having any problem with us having that, that produce anything. Yeah, I think it probably would be. If we're out there sort of, maybe we could, through Julia or something, find a time. Is that okay? Would that be a problem? Yeah. It may be quite, we didn't really look at these vegetation areas I'm thinking about. I mean, really we did was just sort of spot broadly where the different lots were and the building platforms. And I think tomorrow we probably want to have a closer look at sort of, where the trail would go and the revegetation areas and things like that. So again, I think it would be quite helpful if someone was there.
I think it would be very helpful
who
to
sort of could roughly point out
yes.
It gets to here rather
yes.
than us making things up.
Yep.
Which is probably quite dangerous.
That's
So maybe if there's a telephone number or something. I don't think we're going to be rushing up, getting up too early in the morning.
No.
I think the sun will come up a little bit.
So it might be more sort of around 10 o'clock or something like that. But not yet. Yeah. So then we'll get a chance to be out there and come back here. And, yeah. Okay?
Right.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Sorry, Bill.
That's impossible.